All right. You are listening to The Real World on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from the unceded territories of the Musqueam people at the University of British Columbia. The Real World is UBC Film Society's radio segment where we talk about all things film related. And not only do we host this radio show, but we put on various film screenings throughout the week. And for many more movie-related events, check our Instagram, which is at UBC Film Society. And this week, join us this Thursday in The Norm for Possession at 6 and Perfect Blue at 8. Very exciting.
You don't know how significant this is. Well, maybe you do.
Yeah.
The Norm is reopening after like quite a long hiatus under construction. I don't really know what was under construction.
No idea.
It often goes under construction, then you go back
it's
and...
the screen and the speakers, I think, are the biggest things.
Isn't it always?
The screen and the speakers.
Yeah.
It's going to be like a... IMAX, yeah. D-Box movie theater experience, guys.
Yeah. But, you know, we're so back. And we will also be right back because we have some ads and PSAs for you guys. So we'll be right back after this short little break.
Royal Otis, live in concert, coming to the PNE Forum in Vancouver on October 22nd. Fresh off the heels of their debut album, Prats in Pain, and the viral cover of Murder on the Dance Floor for Triple J's Like a Virgin, don't miss the Australian duo on their biggest tour yet, Royal Otis, Glory to Glory Fall Tour. Tickets are on sale now at ticketleader.ca. TicketLeader.ca. Catch California noise artists TVMA and Andrew Wayne as they bring their West Coast tour to Green Auto on Wednesday, October 16th. Joined by local favorites, Two Girls, One Daw, Tough Cell, B4 At, and Libra Baby. Don't miss this night of genre-blurring electronic music by queer and trans artists. Doors at 7 p.m. and music at 8 p.m. Tickets are $10 online via Green Auto's Eventbrite or $15 at the door. Masks required. Can't wait to see you there.
K'lalalelum is an urban Indigenous health and wellness cooperative in Vancouver's downtown east side. Taking a decolonized approach to healthcare, K'lalalelum aims to partner Indigenous elders with physicians and allied health professionals to provide culturally informed physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual care to our community members. You can join us in helping to decolonize healthcare and supporting members of the downtown east side by sharing our story or providing single, monthly, or annual donations. Head over to our website, kilalalelum.ca, or Instagram at kilalalelum to learn more or donate.
Are you a writer?
Listener?
Dreamer?
Music nerd?
Want to cover artists?
Visit venues?
Write something?
Events?
Personal essays?
Anything.
Submit to Discorder magazine and then take it a step further on Hail Discordia with your hosts, Zoe
and Izzy. Hail Discordia is an audio translation of Discorder magazine. We interview writers, play music and soundscapes, and do a deep dive of each zine issue. Hail Discordia plays at 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on the third Thursday of every month on CITR 101.9 FM.
Submit something for the magazine and come onto the show. Or just tune in and listen. We promise it's worth it.
All right. So here we are back again, the real world, as per usual, 4 to 5. I'm Emma.
I'm Lily.
We have a very special guest joining us today.
Hi, guys. I'm Millie.
Welcome back, Millie.
Yay, I'm so happy to be back.
We're so happy to have you back. This is great. We love all the guests we've been having recently.
It's so much more fun. Stellar lineup, really.
I know, right?
But we've been missing Millie.
Yeah.
It's been a while.
It's about time I have my own private
Your own show?
Yeah. My private episode.
Oh, okay. It's about time that you take over hosting the real world, Millie. This is your training.
This is a transition episode. You're never hearing from Lily again.
No, you needed your solo moment.
Exactly. And for today, we are talking about VIFF films that we saw at the Vancouver International Film Festival, which I will admit I was lacking in. I saw one. The numbers you guys are about to throw out are about to put me to shame, I think. Because, Lily, how many did you see?
No, I didn't see a lot this year. I only saw 3.
Okay, that makes me feel, like, somewhat better.
Good, I'm glad I do it for you. I was thinking of seeing 17, but then I was like, no, yeah. That would, like, make Emma feel bad. That would embarrass me live on air, I don't think I'm going to do that, just as a friend.
I appreciate you keeping me in mind.
Yeah, of course.
I saw 10.
Ooh.
No, but then I booked 10, and then I was like, wait, this means I actually have to show up for 10 films in a week.
That's crazy.
Awful. Yeah. But it was fun. It was for the love of the game.
Yeah. You have to commit to it. Last year I saw 8, and I thought I was crazy. I thought I was, like, charting territory never taken.
You gotta stop. You're out of control.
8 is not crazy. Like, 10 gets crazy, but people are seeing, like, 18. People are seeing 20.
Like, I did a triple feature on the last day, and it almost wiped me out, I think. Just 3 films back to back.
Oh, that's a trek.
Yeah.
That would have ended me, I think. I'm good for 1, and that's it. Mm-hmm. That's why I saw 1. Okay. That's enough.
That's enough for me.
Yeah.
I'm saying, like, we have to stop making so much film.
Like, guys, stop all films.
Stop releasing films. Like, we have enough. Yeah. Come on.
Time to catch up. Let's take, like, a year off, you know?
Was your triple feature all in one theater, though?
No. So I had 2 at the VIFF Center, which is, like, near the Yaletown station.
Yeah.
And then 1 at the Playhouse, which isn't, they're both downtown, so it wasn't bad. But we ended up having to get an Uber because we wanted to get food. We had an hour break between the last film ending and the next film starting. And it was, like, a 20-minute walk. But we wanted to get food. And you, like, VIFF, you need to show up early. So we ended up Ubering straight from the Bracca because we were like, there's just no way.
Yeah.
We'll make it in time. But, it was an experience.
It's cutthroat at VIFF.
Mm-hmm.
And we have selected from our very extensive repertoire of films 3 movies to discuss with you guys today. We are talking about A Different Man, Anora, and Happy End. So I don't think any of us have, like, collectively all seen one of the 3 films. We've all seen, like, 1 individually, but none of them have, like, 2 of us have seen them, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So this is very much just going to be each one of us yapping about 1 movie and what we thought of it for a little bit. So let's jump right into it, you know? I've been stalling for long enough. So we're going to start with A Different Man, which was the one that I saw. Which is directed by Aaron Schimberg and starring Sebastian Stan and Adam Pearson. So this movie follows actor Edward, who's played by Sebastian Stan, who undergoes a radical medical procedure to transform his appearance. As he begins to live life with this new face, he meets Oswald, also played by Adam Pearson. No, not also played by Adam Pearson. Played by Adam Pearson, who is everything he couldn't be. As the film goes on, Edward becomes more and more obsessed with Oswald, journeying down a dark path of attempting to reclaim what he's lost. So I knew I wanted to see this movie as, like, one of my must-sees of the festival. There were others, like Anora and Bird, that I really wanted to see that just, like, couldn't make it work.
Okay, but to be fair, you got to 1 because you were volunteering at VIFF like crazy.
That's true.
So don't take credit away from Emma. Yeah. She was contributing to the VIFF community in other ways.
I was running that single-handedly. They had me back there hand churning each projector.
Yeah. So no wonder it was hard. And you have to prioritize, like you said. And so anyway, you prioritized this one and it was a good choice.
This was a good choice. I am very happy that of the 1 movie I saw at the festival, it was this one, because this was, like, certified not a flop. I would have been so bummed if I'd gone out to see 1 movie and it sucked.
Yeah.
So I think, like, the reason this was such an interesting movie is because it kind of deals with these ideas of self-confidence and beauty, but through a male lens, which we don't see that often. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, I know, like, all these movies dealing with, like, beauty standards and, like, self-image and all that usually center around women. And, like, this isn't, like, something in the movie that's, like, played for laughs. Like, it is taken seriously, the fact that Edward, like, has no confidence in himself, which, like, Pearson, the director, is kind of like, not Pearson, oh my god, I'm getting all my names confused, Aaron has kind of talked about as putting a lot of himself into this character of Edward. So the director has a cleft palate, so he says, like, all through his life he's never felt very confident, mm-hmm. as a result of that. And then he met Adam Pearson, who also has, like, a facial disfigurement, and just saw him, like, this, like, insane, like, confident, super charismatic individuals, like, oh, is this what my life could have been like, oh. had I, you know, had the confidence. So I think it's really interesting how honesty and transparency are kind of, like, taken care of in this film, because they've all, like, everyone involved has spoken at length about how they were very essential to creating this film. I think that really shows in how, like, the narrative unfolds. Like, when we are presented with Edward, it's in this very, like, frank manner. He isn't, like, villainized or championed. He's just shown to us. So I think that really, like, ties into a lot of what the director said about not wanting to try and be funny or to educate or to make the audience feel bad, just to, like, present them with this character, kind of take us with him through this journey, and then leave us at the end.
Okay, yeah.
Which I think some of the side characters in this are also really interesting into adding into that narrative. Because you get this one character, Ingrid Vold, who kind of almost will-they-won't-they's with Edward before his big surgery.
Okay.
And spoilers for a different man, but, like, when he does get the surgery, he just basically pretends the old Edward died. And this is he becomes a different man. Like, he literally takes on a different persona. And so Ingrid thinks Edward's dead. And she meets Sebastian Stan's, like, new character.
And she doesn't know that?
No, and she doesn't know it's Edward.
Oh.
And the reason that they're reintroduced to each other is because Ingrid is writing a play based off her, like, relationship with Edward. So it's, like, initially you kind of think, like, oh, you know, maybe, like, this is another sort of thing where it's, like, oh, she's trying to, like, exploit this story. And then as it goes on, you kind of realize that she's just a bad person overall. Mm-hmm. Like, she gets into a relationship again with Edward, with his new face, and there's this gift that Edward gave to her, this typewriter. And when Edward post-surgery is like, oh, this is a really cool typewriter, where'd you get it? She's like, oh, I found it in the trash, you know, you can have it if you want. And this obviously, like, hurts him. But she still ends up casting new Edward aside in favor of Oswald. It's like she's just this very, like, shallow figure. I think it's really, I don't know, it's really interesting. She kind of fancies herself as this, like, special person for Edward. Like, in the play, she's very much, like, you know, playing at this, like, Beauty and the Beast sort of motif that's, like, very typical to these sorts of stories. So I think it is really interesting having her inclusion there. But, yeah, and, like, all the performances are also insane in this. They're all stellar. Everyone is just going so crazy. Like, I hadn't seen Adam Pearson in much before this, but he was really, like, really good. But, yeah, I think the film, it isn't trying to push the idea that everything would be better if you, like, just obviously, like, change one aspect of yourself. But it also isn't trying to push that, like, self-acceptance super hard. It's kind of just, like, pushing, like, a neutrality of the self, I feel like.
Ooh.
It's, like, more of just a thing of, like, you won't always be able to reach the heights of being, like, yeah, you know, I love myself despite all my flaws or whatever. You just have to be able to hit a minimum threshold of, like, I am who I am and that's okay.
Totally.
Because otherwise you'll just drive yourself insane.
At least for what I understand, like, the commentary on identity with Ingrid's character, I guess, would be a message around, like, also you can't base your identity off of someone else, which is obviously like so much easier said than done. But just in terms of like developing her character and not really knowing that she was like as bad as she was until like later in the film, right?
Yeah.
That like anything that he based off of her at the beginning wouldn't be completely accurate because like everyone's just seeing everything in life from completely different angles and perspectives.
Yeah. Which is like, I think really interesting as well when we kind of think about like parasocial relationships in a way, or just like how we engage with media and social media and like other people's lives. Yeah. Like there is a sort of like voyeurism and obsession that we can fall into, I think. And it's interesting to like take this piece of media alongside that. I think it says some really cool things about like how we kind of like can get so wrapped up in the lives of others, we let our own slide
that
away.
Links to what we're screening on Thursday, Perfect Blue.
Yeah.
That's about parasocial relationships with celebrities.
Unintentional segue, guys.
Yeah.
Go check out.
Wait, what does that mean? Parasocial relationships
like
with celebrities?
A relationship with someone that you don't know. So like you being invested in an influencer or a celebrity's life.
Yeah.
But you don't know them on a personal level.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so interesting.
It's freaky, but it's really interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, absolutely. And this is definitely, Perfect Blue is obviously like, yeah, a great film to go see for that.
Yeah.
Oh, I haven't seen it, but now I do, because does it relate? Because I often think about, like, you know, when a celebrity you really like does something and you're like almost personally feel really disappointed in them and you're like, oh, I just never thought that they would do this. And it's like, what are you talking about? What do you mean you didn't think that they would do this? Like, you don't know them at all.
Yeah, that's kind of like the entire plot of Perfect
Blue. Okay, perfect. Yeah. I gotta see it.
Shout out, guys, pull up to the norm.
There we go. Yeah, this week, Friday, Thursday 8 p.m go see Perfect Blue and A Different Man if you can.
Yes,
if you get the chance.
Double feature,
I highly recommend. The score was also crazy fun for this. Like very much in the vein of, it felt like Poor Things kind of, just in like how discombobulated it kind of was. But there's this really fun number where they're at a karaoke bar and Oswald gets up and performs. And it's just, it's such an iconic moment in the film, which is also, like, so beautiful. I haven't, like, even touched on, like, the warmth of this film. Like, just how it casts everything. It's, like, sometimes, like, almost nightmarishly.
Like the coloring?
Yeah. It's really, like, a warm film, kind of grainy look.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's, like, in some of these apartments, especially Oswald's, like, it feels, like, almost too perfect, like nightmarishly so. But it's really, really interesting. And yeah, any scenes in this bar, they go there multiple times, always feel like super like feverish and like strange. Like all the lights are just a little too dim or a little too bright. And at one point, Oswald gets up, sings this song, I Want to Get Next to You. It's awesome, so I'm gonna play a little bit for you guys. This is a little way to round off this segment. So
cool.
Here is I Want to Get Next to You by Adam Pearson and Umberto Smirli.
Thank you.
All right. That was I Want to Get Next to You from A Different Man's Soundtrack.
I liked it.
Yeah. It's fun. Yeah, it's even better when you see it in the context of the scene.
Yeah.
Yeah, such a fun moment in the film.
Is this getting wide release, like, soon?
I don't know. I hope so. This is definitely, it's a fun theater film.
September, what? It says it was released in September in Canada.
What?
Oh, okay.
That's crazy.
I don't know, guys. Don't quote me on anything.
We might be able to see it at some point. Well, let's hope.
Let's hope. Let's hope. Yeah, I want to see it. Well, I wanted to ask a question about like the production design a little bit, because you were saying how you don't really get into the mind of the main character. Like, you're kind of just like given this detail on his life, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you're not really getting too far into what he is like thinking, I guess. Like, you're just given an outside perspective. But I was curious, like, when he changes and he gets like his surgery, do we get to see from his perspective, like, how his environment, like the set, changes, or does it stay pretty similar even though he's changed, like become a new person?
There's like, there's definitely an expansion in like where he goes. Like, the first night out with his like new face or whatever, he goes to this bar he's never been to before. I just like gets like so drunk, like makes out with someone in the bathroom, like a whole new thing he's like never done. And he does go to like new places after this, and like he basically like reinvents his life. But as the film goes on, we see him gravitating towards like places he used to live, like his old apartment, or like pretty much this whole building where the playwright chooses neighbor. So he's just spending all of his time in these places he used to haunt. So he's just constantly like returning to his old self, I think. Like, even though he can now go out and explore all these new places with this new face, he doesn't. Like, he still is like drawn back to what he was.
Yeah,
I think
that's interesting, just like the role of setting and like place in the self and identity.
Totally. Place plays a big part in this film, I think.
Cool.
Yeah, that was A Different Man. I highly recommend. And now we'll move on to the film everyone's been talking about, Anora.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So Anora won the Palme d'Or, if I pronounce that correctly, at the Cannes Film Festival. So it's been on a lot of people's radars, and I was lucky enough to catch tickets to go see it. And it's directed by Sean Baker, who is the same guy who did The Florida Project and Red Rocket. And the plot is Anora, who's a young sex worker from Brooklyn, gets her chance at a Cinderella story when she meets and impulsively marries the son of a Russian billionaire. Once the news reaches Russia, her fairy tale is threatened as the parents set out to New York to get the marriage annulled. So basically, I feel like this has a very different tone to some of Sean Baker's other films. Like, it's very much heartbreaking, but it's very comedic, and he wants it to be. So it follows Anora, or she calls herself Arnie, and she works as like an exotic dancer in a nightclub in Brooklyn. But if customers are willing to pay a little extra, she'll do other things. And she gets called out to meet this Russian, like young Russian guy, because she's the only person in the nightclub who speaks Russian. And they really hit it off, and he asks her, like, he invites her over, they throw a lot of parties. She meets all of his friends, and he eventually says, well, I want to be exclusive with you. Like, I want to date you, not just have you be my escort, basically. And she agrees. And he's like, his parents are like mega billionaires in Russia, and he's living in a mansion in New York City off of daddy's money, like huge house, security guards, the whole nine yards. And Arnie, or Anora, she's very self-aware of her actions, and she knows what she's doing is risky by like hanging out with this like barely 21-year-old guy with no job, just living life. And they go to Vegas and they decide to get married, just like very much like a Cinderella story. But just like Cinderella, it's a fairy tale until the clock strikes 12, and then everything starts to go wrong. And you can kind of anticipate where it's going, but it's still heartbreaking to watch it roll out. So yeah, it's a comedy, but it's not a typical comedy. There's this real-time, like, 20-minute long sequence in the middle of the film where Ivan, is that his name? Yeah, Ivan, the love interest's parents in Russia, find out about the marriage. And his parents send over these, like, thugs almost to come and check to see if the marriage is real. And they break into the mansion and they kind of tie Honora up, and Ivan, like, runs and he's nowhere to be found. And she's, like, basically getting harassed by these men who she doesn't know. And, you know, they're like, where's the marriage certificate? We need to see it. We need to take pictures. We need to, like, give back the ring. You're not married to him. We're getting this annulled. And it was really heartbreaking and, like, frustrating to see her being treated so, like, badly, I guess. Like, her whole life was set up. She was getting married to this. And they really were in love, I believe.
Okay.
To this man. And everything was going great. They had a really fun time in Vegas, to just get it all ripped apart in, like, a span of, like, 2 minutes.
Wow.
Basically. And then from that point onwards, like, the tone shifts and they go on this great long hunt all around New York, which is very comedic, but they're trying to find Yvonne, who's, like, completely disappeared. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, lots of sex, lots of comedic moments. There's a lot of excess, and I think the excess tells us something. But then it punches you in the throat with real life. Yeah.
What, like, is she a lovable character?
Like,
what makes the audience, like, feel for her?
She's very real. She's very down to earth. I feel like she's the kind of girl who just have, like, an insane chat with in the club bathroom. You know? Like,
yeah.
So, like, a girl's girl.
She takes you right in.
Yeah, exactly. I really, really empathized with her the whole film. Mm. I just wanted to see her be happy.
Yeah.
And, like, get treated fairly
in these, like, tragic moments. Like, how does she, or, like, anything else about the film, like, this, the music or the colors, like, how do you feel her, like, sadness and her tragedy?
I think it was mainly just, like, yeah, the cinematography, maybe. Mm-hmm. Like, you just, it was very much from her point of view, and you felt the struggle.
Yeah.
Like, there are a lot of scenes of them in a car, and you can just see her, like, not crying, but she's so frustrated, and mm-hmm. you really feel that. Like, the franticness, it's, like, the editing.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, like, beautiful colors, beautiful lighting, cinematography. I don't remember much about the sound.
I mean, I saw in the Florida Project, like, I remember the colors being so awesome. Yeah. So I can imagine, like, I don't know if that comes through as well.
Very vibrant, like, these nightclubs, yeah. All these neon lights everywhere.
Yeah.
And they're partying in Los Angeles, or no, in Las Vegas. And then all of a sudden, again, when the real-time scene hits, that's when the tone changes. And it gets very bleak.
Mm.
Yeah. And you can feel it in the film.
Interesting. Yeah, because I've never seen, like, another Sean Baker film.
Yeah.
And, like, I hear nothing but, like, good things pretty much about, like, the Florida Project. And even, like, Tangerine,
yeah.
Yes. I heard was really interesting. Yeah. So I don't know, like, how does this one stack up against his other films for you?
I think the comedic element really took me by surprise. I mm-hmm. wasn't expecting it to be as funny. And I felt bad laughing.
Yeah.
Because it's, like, you're laughing at the expense of, like, a sex worker who's being exploited.
Yeah.
Basically. Mm-hmm. That's, like, a very common theme, I guess. But she's very self-aware. She knows what she's doing, and mm-hmm. she is not afraid to stand up for herself. Like, she's fighting back till the last second. So yeah, it felt empowering, but also to watch her navigate the situation.
Yeah.
But, like, you can't help but feel like she is being exploited, and she's being pushed around and, like, objectified, because they're like, well, you're a disgrace to the family. You can't marry this billionaire because you're nothing but a whore, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, are you kidding me? Like, don't you dare call me that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, last week we talked a lot about leading ladies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I guess that ties in a little bit, because she sounds like a very, like, feisty, like, strong girl.
Yes, very much so.
Like, and maybe, like, flipping a narrative of, like, any stereotype of, like, ditziness or something.
Yeah,
like,
there's no sign of ditziness in her.
Like, she's a smart girl.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And she was very likable to me.
Well, that's mm-hmm.
cool. Yeah.
Yeah, because I find that with, especially with, like, male writers and male directors, sometimes when they pick, like, female-centric mm-hmm. stories, there can be a bit of, like, just the way they write women can mm-hmm. be a bit, like, icky or off-putting.
Yeah.
I feel like this one was pretty, like, it was stood very on her own solid. Two feet.
Yeah,
that's good.
Yeah.
But yeah, Anora, would you recommend?
I would absolutely recommend it. I think it's hitting cinemas very soon, as far as I'm aware. It's already on the Cineplex website.
Wow.
Ah,
so that's God. Exciting.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Yeah. Yeah. No, this is one I really want to see.
Mm-hmm. I recommend all his films, honestly.
Oh.
The Florida Project was the first one I saw, and that's a really, really beautiful film, but very heartbreaking. Yeah.
So save that one for
But
a
all
day
of his films already... kind of have that tone.
Yeah.
Yes.
Hmm.
Oh, that's fair. Do you think this one follows in that tradition? Of, like,
yeah. Melancholy? Like this, the Cinderella story. But yeah, definitely. Like you can see it happening, mm-hmm. but there's nothing you can do to stop it.
Mm.
And you can't like look away. You have to keep watching.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. No, I am really excited to see this movie mm-hmm. when it does come out.
Yeah.
And you picked a song for us from the trailer, I believe.
I did.
So it's Dreaming by Blondie,
mm-hmm.
the trailer for Anora. All right, and that was Dreaming by Blondie from Anora.
Cool. I like that song, too. Mm-hmm. We've got a great lineup of music today. Wow.
I know. Stakes are on, Lily. We are going to be moving on to our third final film of the episode. And this is Lily's film, Happy End.
Yeah, so I saw, like I said, only a couple of films at VIFF this year, and I think this one was my favorite, so that's why I wanted to talk about it a little bit. But I thought it was so awesome. I mostly like chose my films based off of which theater they were playing at because I just didn't want to like go too far. But
wait, which theater was this?
This was at the Fifth Avenue, which the closest one to me.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's a problematic way to approach watching, but it's strategic and it's comfortable. And I feel pretty content with my decision because I ended up seeing this, which wasn't like super on my radar until I just checked my schedule and how close if I could make it. So I saw Happy End, which is a debut fiction feature from the director Neo Sora. So I think he's done some shorts in the past and maybe like a documentary feature. But yeah, so it follows the two main characters are best friends called Yuta and Ko. And it's set in a near future Tokyo under the threat of a catastrophic earthquake that is looming. So like the big one, if I don't know, we're looming. That's also looming over us. So I thought like the earthquake topic was interesting. And the two friends are basically kind of pranksters at their school. And ultimately, it's a coming of age film following the two best friends, but set in this atmosphere of like extreme political and environmental anxiety. So we've got this looming earthquake that's coming, but we've also got some like government authoritarian like movements like separating from its democracy. And that's kind of playing in the background, but it also like ties into their lives as well. So it's following these two young guys, like they're just in high school, I think. I'm not exactly sure how old they are, but the actors are young. They're like 20. So great performances by them. But they're just kind of moving through these regular coming of age themes that we see a lot and relate to a lot. So friendship and like how friendships grow and change. But then putting it into this political environment and like also the environmental anxiety of the looming earthquake, these friendships are like evolving under really unique circumstances. So I found it like kind of interesting and relatable as people grow up and your friends develop different worldviews and subscribe to new like ideologies. Like, I don't know if you guys experienced anything like that, but the director talked a little bit about like basing it off of your own experience, which I found really relatable. Like when you go to university and then all of a sudden people are like protesting more or joining like specific clubs, and friendships like can change and are affected by that. It's the same like within your family, like when you realize that you have different political views than your family or something like that. So those are kind of the themes that he's covering, which I feel like really strike a chord with a lot of people. And you sympathize with them because you want the best friends to last, but
sometimes you know that can't always happen.
Sometimes like that can't always happen. Yeah, exactly. Under certain circumstances. And he kind of describes it like when these friendships end, it feels like the end of the world. Like it feels like everything's crumbling, but like it just, it can't survive like whatever ideological shifts are going on between you guys. And I like that idea because he describes it like the world crumbling beneath your feet. Meanwhile, they're waiting for this big earthquake to happen. And so this idea of like crumble, like societal like crumble as well, but also like your friendship coming to an end, just really tied together really well for me. And I liked that a lot. And I think that he represents that and channels it a lot through the music as well. So we've got a couple songs that I want to play because guys, like when was the last time you watched a movie and you became like so obsessed with the score? I feel like it actually kind of happens to me a little bit. Quite often.
I was gonna say, if there's one thing about you, you love a score.
I feel like the last one I became like so obsessed with was National Anthem, which we talked about like quite a few episodes ago, and I still listen to that one, but this is my new fixation score.
Okay.
I'm
excited to hear it.
Let's put the listeners on this.
So I'm really excited about it, and so all of these themes are kind of channeling into the songs and you can feel it. So part of the, like, some of the score is, like, a super techno, even, like, electronic feeling, which I think really ties into the urban environment that they're in, like, in Tokyo. And the techno, like, characteristics of that are, like, repetitive, hypnotic feelings, like, all-absorbing, which I think can represent, like, a couple different things in the context of the film. I think it could represent attachment to comforting feelings, like repetitiveness, and how in these like times of political change, returning to something that's repetitive and comforting to you. But I also think that this hypnotic, like all-consuming feeling from the techno has a bit of like a looming threat feeling and building your anticipation, because it's like repeating and repeating and you're like, okay, where is this building?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's what I think you get from like half of the score is really techno and then half of it is a lot softer. But I want to play like the happy end theme, which is like a techno feeling, just so you guys can kind of feel that repetitive like anticipation that I was feeling. I, like, because I know you will. You'll get it.
Okay. All right. This is happy end theme from the happy end movie.
So keep in mind that the characters are also really into techno. Like, that's part of the characters, and they're balancing living in the society that is shifting towards like constant surveillance by the government.
Yeah.
And also in fear of this earthquake, and they're turning to like this creative side, techno, and their friendships to kind of cope with still being a teenager, like still coming of age in this time. And so I think that the techno also ties in really well with that, because they're also just huge techno guys. Yeah. They've always got their headphones around their neck.
Mm-hmm.
They're really into music. And turning to that in that time also, I feel like, could also hit a note with a lot of young audiences of turning to something that's comforting to you in the face of like all of these intertwining crises.
And I think music's really important to people our age, at least, or everyone, actually.
Yeah.
As like being a source of comfort and calming yourself down in high stakes moments.
Absolutely. Like, that's what I kind of felt as well. Like, at the same time that the techno is playing a dramatic as a dramatic element to build anticipation for the audience, it also feels like it's cocooning the characters themselves.
Yeah.
And you can feel that, like, as something that's protecting them a little bit from the outside world as they turn to that. Like, exactly like we turn to music. I don't know. Do you guys listen to music while you like study or something?
Yeah.
Calms me down.
Yeah.
But yeah. And then some of the music also has more of a nostalgic feeling, because the director is kind of reflecting on his youth a little bit. And also some of the other storytellers that are involved with this narrative.
Mm-hmm.
And so some of them are a little bit more slow paced and they have like a lonely feeling. And I really like the idea that he's trying to capture in these songs that are a part of the score. One of them being how solemn like it can feel to be nostalgic, because like while nostalgia, you're reflecting often on like happy memories and stuff, like there's something in you that's sad that those moments are over, like they are in the past.
Yeah.
Like they're no more. And so seeing these like young characters just from the beginning of the film to the end, some parts of their friendships, their lives are no more, like because they've just both changed so much due to their like circumstances in school or just in society as well. So another one of these songs that kind of just has more of this slow, like solemn, lonely feeling, but also like nostalgic, is called Love Variation 1. Fun. So we'll give that a little play.
Yeah, let's give that a whirl.
Yes. Did you guys like?
I did like. Yes. It was very fun. Very different from the first one.
I know. It's got range, which is what is so cool about the film, because it is trying to balance like that these are just kids. They're just growing up.
Mm-hmm.
But also they better grow up quick because they're like involved in all these protests against like their government that is like increasing law enforcement in the city. And I think the score for me is like what represents all of these themes so well, but also it's got some great just imagery in the film. We've got like these dark, eerie streets. I don't know. Are you guys into like near future, like dystopian type stuff?
I'm interested in the near future dystopian thing every now and again.
I like this stuff because those types of near future, like, their near future. I don't know why I'm explaining this, but they they feel different enough that they scare you a little bit, but they feel close enough that you're like,
this could be me in a few years.
And that also scares you a little bit. Like, I just watched Her recently, and so it's kind of looking at a near future LA, and you're like, okay, this is so crazy. Like, he's always like talking to his AI. I can't believe people aren't talking to each other in the public space, but also, okay, we're not that far off from that.
No, yeah, with the AIs today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, seriously. And that's what I think this movie, like, I was thinking about a little bit, because I've never been to, like, Tokyo, I guess, but just in general of surveillance and, like, governing and... So, like, the police scan your face every time they see you in this film. Like, they take out their phones and they scan your face and they're given all this information on you and your documentation and things like that, which just feels kind of, like, crazy and silly, but also just, like, not so far out of reach in some places, you know what I mean? Which also makes it even more eerie and even more scary.
No kidding. That's, yeah. That sounds really interesting, though. Like, I definitely want to check this one out if it ever gets, like, a wide release.
Yeah, you should. If you're interested in, like, that type of dystopian themes and also looking at, like, private space versus public and overstepping of the government, like, taking over private or taking over the public and making it private, things like that is really cool. And then just, like, seeing people that are relatable in our age, like, dealing with things like themes such as those. But, yeah, that was Happy End. Some of my highlights and key takeaways, I guess.
Oh, got a little bit of time left, so I figured we could just do like a general little chat. You know, what other movies did you guys see?
What'd you think of them?
I can jump off of what you just said about your film with like the protests and stuff. I saw The Seed of the Sacred Fig, which I don't know if you guys have seen. That was also one of VIFF's biggest headliners. Mm-hmm. And it's an Iranian film. And it's actually a really interesting backstory with the director. Is he basically had to go into hiding to make this film because the film highlights like the ongoing protests in Iran in a very like upfront way. And so he went into hiding after the film was made and only kind of popped out once it premiered in, I think, in Scotland.
Oh, wow.
And it's basically about this family who the father works for the government, but it's a very corrupt government, and he spends all day signing like death penalties, even though he doesn't think it's right. And the two daughters are like university and high school aged, and they are very liberal and they don't agree with what's happening in the city and they want to join the protests. So it's kind of a divide because the dad's like, well, I work for the government I'm representing, you can't do that. But they're like, what's happening out here is wrong. And they show a lot of like real life footage through like Instagram reels and YouTube videos of actual protests in Iran.
Oh, wow.
And that was a really, really interesting film. I really enjoyed it. I think it's a very important watch.
I saw a protest film kind of as well. It was called The Stand, which is directed by Christopher Auchter. And it's like a documentary following the 1985 Haida Gwaii blockade on Lyell Island. And he kind of like draws on all of this archive footage. But what I thought was super cool, he's following this blockade, and it's like a 3 month long blockade in 1985. 72 people are arrested.
Oh.
And he's like, he found all of this archival footage, but ties in like animation, which if you've seen any of his other work, like I'd seen Mountain of Skana, like one of his recent shorts. And he's also like really into animation. So he ties animation into documentary, which is something I feel like you don't get to see as often.
Yeah, totally.
To represent some like supernatural creatures that like are important to Haida storytelling. And so I thought that combination to tell his narrative was really cool. If you're interested in like a combination of documentary archive and like animation intertwining, that was definitely a highlight for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that sounds really interesting. There were so many like films that I wanted to see that, like, I just didn't. Like, Anora was one that I was like,
it was tough to though to get tickets to Anora.
How'd you do it?
A friend of a friend dropped out last minute,
and how early did you get in line?
Oh, we were there like an hour in advance. If you don't know the VIFF ritual, is you need to be there at least an hour in advance if you want a semi-decent seat.
Yeah,
especially at the Playhouse, where there are like 800 seats and the screen is like the size.
And if you think you're early,
you're not early. No.
And you'll be wrapped around the building. Yeah. But lots of people are super friendly in line.
Yeah.
And chatty.
And the VIFF crowds are funny too. Like, they get into it. There was a guy in front of us who like had his phone out, and someone goes, "Hey, you asshole, can you turn off your phone?"
Yeah.
Like, they're serious about it.
Good.
Oh, yeah. No, they won't play. VIFF crowds are. No, they're serious.
But it's definitely an experience watching a film at VIFF. Like, I saw Saturday Night, which I think has already hit theaters, either today or tomorrow. But there's just something about watching it in a theater of, like, I don't know how many the Playhouse seats, like at least 400 or 500.
A packed theater, like every seat is taken.
Yes, exactly.
That's something else for sure,
Yeah. Oh, it's like the best feeling.
Yeah.
Well, it was a great VIFF year.
This was great year for VIFF. Wish I could have seen more of the movies, but I'll definitely circle back to those that get wide releases.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah, and you know, I recommend like anyone listening, go see Anora, go see Happy End, go see A Different Man if you can, go see all these fun films. But yeah, thank you so much for tuning in. This is The Real World. We're here every week, 4 to 5. I'm Emma.
I'm Lily.
And I'm Millie.
Thanks for coming on, Millie. It was so great to
have
you.
Thank you for having me.
My gosh. But yeah, we'll see you guys next week.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.